Hello friends, we are now going to see chapter 20 of the Negotiable Instrument Act. Now this chapter summarizes the entire topics that we have learnt under Negotiable Instrument Act, and this chapter covers the entire act section wise. From section 1 to the last section, it tells you in brief what is the act, what are the provisions, and how the act moves forward. See, this act was enacted in the year 1881. That means 1881, in the 19th century. India was under the British rule at that time. So this act was based on the Bill of Exchange Act of England. All the provisions in the Negotiable Instrument Act were derived from whatever was the established practice in trade in India at that time and the provisions given in Bill of Exchange Act of England. So this act at that time applied to the whole of India, and it was undivided India at that time. So this act was applicable to the entire country. The provisions of this act does not affect any other law. Just because this act came into force, it did not mean that other laws related to trade stopped or became defunct. They also continued. So the provisions of this act does not affect any other law, such as the Indian Contract Act, the Partnership Act, and the Indian Paper Currency Act. Why Indian Paper Currency Act is specifically mentioned here is because in the topic on negotiable instruments, we have bills of exchange, a promissory note, and a check. A promissory note is something where one person promises to pay to another person on demand or on a future date. What is a currency note? A currency note also is a promise. The promise to pay to the bearer of the instrument some amount. Say 100 rupee currency note, it will say I am ready to pay, I promise to pay rupees 100 to the bearer. So these are overlapping each other. That is why they have specifically mentioned that the Indian Paper Currency Act of 1871, which was already in force 10 years prior to 1881, they have specifically mentioned that this Negotiable Instrument Act will not affect the Indian Paper Currency Act. That act will remain in force as it was formulated that time. The act came into force, although it was enacted in 1881, in December 1881, the act came into force, became applicable to all the traders and other individuals from 1st March 1882. In this act, the word banker includes any person acting as a banker. See, remember one thing, that in the year 1881, there was no nationalized bank. All the banks were private banks. And there were many private individuals working as money lenders. They were doing the job of a bank. So that is why this act says the word banker, whether the word bank appears in the title of the institution, organization or not, any person who is doing the job of a banker, this act will be applicable to them. So in this act, the word banker includes any person acting as a banker, including those money changers, money lenders, and it also included the post office savings bank. Post office were in existence that time. So any post office which is to have savings accounts, savings bank accounts, they were also included. And whatever provisions in the Negotiable Instrument Act are there, they are applicable to all these money lenders and the post office. See, now we are not going section by section for this presentation. We are going to see the important sections, the definitions, and certain provisions which are very important for our day-to-day trade. The first important section is the definition of the word promissory note. Section 4 deals with it. It says a promissory note is an instrument in writing. So obviously it has to be in writing. When you say it has to be in writing, then it should be on a paper or maybe on the computer today or on a typewriter. So it has to be in writing, not being a bank note or a currency note. So this definition takes care of the fact that Indian Paper Currency Act is not violated or affected. So this word specifically says a promissory note not being a bank note or a currency note. A bank note is issued only by the bank. A currency note is issued only by Reserve Bank of India. So a promissory note will not include the bank note or a currency note. It contains an unconditional undertaking signed by the maker. See, here they are not using the word order. It says it contains an unconditional undertaking. Undertaking is something cast on oneself. Order is something which you give to another person. So here a promissory note is an instrument in writing containing an unconditional undertaking signed by the maker. He has to sign it to pay a certain sum of money only. So it is only money. We are not talking of payment in kind, payment in service. It is only payment in money to or to the order of a certain person or to the bearer of the instrument. So it will be a promissory note which is signed by the maker. It is in writing. It's an unconditional undertaking to make the payment to or to the order of a certain person or to the bearer of the instrument. So it can be to the bearer, it can be to the order of some specified individual. This is the definition of promissory note. Now see, there are so many illustrations. The first one says, I promise to pay B or order rupees 5 lakhs. The second illustration, I acknowledge myself to be indebted to B in rupees 10,000 to be paid on demand for value received. The next one says, Mr. B, I owe you 1,000 rupees. Another illustration says, I promise to pay B rupees 50,000 and all other sums which shall be due to him. Means 50,000 plus whatever else I have to pay to him, that also is included. I promise to pay B rupees 5,000 after deducting any money which he may owe me. He has to give me. I promise to pay B rupees 25,000 7 days after my marriage with C. Now see, in all these illustrations, only the first and second are promissory notes. The rest are not promissory notes. The first one and the second one, they fulfill the requirements of a promissory note. Why the others are not promissory notes? See, in Mr. B, I owe you rupees 1,000. Where is the promise? Where is the promise? Is he promising to pay? What he says, I owe you rupees 1,000. That means I am acknowledging my debt. I'm not promising to pay. I owe you 1,000. पर यहाँ कहीं लिखा नहीं है कि I'm going to pay. मैं पैसे दूंगा, ये प्रॉमिस नहीं है इसमें. I promise to pay B rupees 50,000 and all other sums which shall be due to him. यहाँ पे प्रॉमिस है, but the money is not certain. It is not 50,000. It is something more than 50,000. 50,000 plus other money which I have to pay to him. So amount may be 60,000 or 80,000 or 2 lakhs. We don't know. The amount is not certain. That is why that particular condition of the definition is not fulfilled. So this is not a promissory note. I promise to pay B rupees 5,000 after deducting any money which he may owe me. Yahan pe promise hai. Amount also is there. But amount ke aage conditions dal diya. What is that? It is mentioned that I will pay 50,000 after deducting what he has to pay me. Now what he has to pay, that amount is not mentioned. It is not clear whether he has to pay me 1,000 rupees or 1 rupee. So the amount is not 5,000. It may be 4,000 or it may be 4,999. Pata nahi. Amount is not certain. Isiliye ye condition bhi yahan fulfill nahi hua. So this is not a promissory note. The next one, it says, I promise to pay B 25,000. 7 days after my marriage with C. यहाँ amount is certain, पर condition डाल दिया कि मेरी शादी होने के बाद और वो भी C के साथ होने के बाद 7 दिन के बाद मैं पैसा दूंगा. अब शादी कब होगी? That is not certain. शादी C के साथ ही होगी? ये भी certain नहीं है. As per this promise, So how do you know when this amount is really going to be paid? So the conditions attached are violating the definition of the promissory note, because the definition says promissory note is an unconditional undertaking. यहाँ पे condition डाल दिया, इसीलिए this is not a promissory note. So only the first two are promissory notes. Now section 5 deals with bill of exchange. It says a bill of exchange is an instrument in writing. Again, like a promissory note, this is also an instrument in writing. So obviously it has to be on a paper containing an unconditional order. So here again it has to be unconditional. Order जब बोल दिया है तो order means somebody is directing somebody. तो यहाँ पे minimum दो व्यक्ति आ ही गए. Signed by the maker. So like a promissory note, यहाँ भी the maker has to sign it. Directing a certain person. That means you are informing, instructing somebody to pay a certain sum of money only. Now like in the promissory note, यहाँ पे भी amount has to be certain. And the amount has to be only by way of money, nothing else. Not by kind, not in service, not in kind. I cannot tell him, okay, Mr. B, please pay to C 10 tolas of gold. That will not be a bill of exchange. Yahan pe likha hai, it has to be only money. So a certain sum of money only. To or to the order of a certain person, or to the bearer of the instrument. ये नीचे का portion है, it is similar to the promissory note. So a bill of exchange, there are three people involved. Promissory note, there were only two people involved, the maker and the person to whom the money is to be paid. यहाँ पे तीन लोग आ गए, the maker of the instrument, the person to whom the instructions are given, and the person who has to receive the amount. So the person who has to make the payment, he is a certain person, specified person, not any vague individual or imaginary person. To pay a certain sum of money only to or to the order of a certain person. Again, the person who is to receive the payment has to be certain, specified. Again, he cannot be an imaginary person or a fictitious person. It has to be a specified person or to his order or the bearer. Now what is a check? See, the Negotiable Instrument Act says that a negotiable instrument means a promissory note, a bill of exchange or a check. The Act does not define what is negotiable instrument. It has said a negotiable instrument means includes promissory note, bill of exchange or check, and these are defined in the Act. Now section 6 defines a check. It says a check is a bill of exchange drawn on a specified banker. So a check is a bill of exchange, but yahan pe jo drawee hai, the person who has to make the payment is always a bank. It is only the banker. And not expressed to be payable otherwise than on demand. This means that a check has to be necessarily paid on demand. यहाँ पे एक्ट में दो नेगेटिव यूज किया गया है, नॉट एक्सप्रेस टू बी पेबल अदरवाइज देन ऑन डिमांड. सो दैट मीन्स इट हैज टू बी ऑलवेज बी पेबल ऑन डिमांड. इट कैन नॉट बी अदर देन डिमांड. इट कैन नॉट बी अ टाइम इंस्ट्रूमेंट. इट कैन नॉट बी अ यूसेंस बिल. इट इंक्लूड्स द इलेक्ट्रॉनिक इमेज ऑफ अ ट्रंकेटेड चेक एंड अ चेक इन द इलेक्ट्रॉनिक फॉर्म. We are used to seeing the checkbook that we have got from various banks. Wherever we have account, we have a checkbook. We know the paper check. But today, with technology so much in advance, we also include the image of the check, which you scan and put it in the system, your computer system. The image is also a check, and a check prepared in the electronic system itself. Instead of preparing a paper check and scanning it, you prepare the check itself in the system, the electronic form. Now we call this e-check, that is the electronic form. Now this electronic check, the e-check, means a check which contains the exact mirror image of a paper check. Now, whatever is the format of a paper check, the same thing will appear on the screen in the computer. The entire image will appear on the computer system. It is generated, written and signed in a secure system, ensuring minimum safety standards with the use of digital signature. See, in the computer I can type anything. I can just type any bank's name and write any form of a check. It will become a check. Will it be valid? It cannot be valid, because if we start doing it, then there will be thousands and thousands of checks floating in the system. But we cannot allow that to happen. We need security. We don't want frauds happening. So the system has to take care that it is prepared in the system, the electronic check, e-check, by way of a secured method. Not just anyone can type or anyone can modify or anyone can change. It is not that. It is prepared, generated and written and signed. We can also have digital signature to ensure the safety of the instrument. It is prepared also in the system with the safety locks, safety keys. All those passwords will be there, and then those people only can access the check. Others can only view it. They cannot modify. They cannot make changes. And it will be signed by the digital signature, not by ordinary signatures. We just don't take out a printout and then sign on the piece of paper. No, that is not an electronic check. E-check will have no paper image. It will not have a paper version. It will be there in the system. So the e-check will have electronic safety measures. It may be in the code language of the electronic system. So it can be with the asymmetric crypto system. What is crypto system? That is some coded language which we call cryptology. So there, you know, symbols and codes will be used for preparing the check, and it will be signed with digital signature, or it can have biometric signatures. So this is an e-check, not just a check typed with ordinary keyboard and entered in the system. That is not an e-check. An e-check is one which has all the safety measures of a normal check, and it is also signed by biometric or digital signatures. Now, what is a truncated check? What is truncated? What does the word truncation mean? Truncation means to stop further movement, to stop it at that particular level. So we have the physical check. A check is issued by me to somebody. That somebody is staying in Delhi. I am in Mumbai. Now that person in Delhi has to send the check for collection to Mumbai, and then the money will go back to his place in Delhi, and then he will get the payment. Now this procedure of him submitting the check in his bank at Delhi, that bank sending it for collection to Mumbai and then getting the payment, this may involve a period of 15 to 20 days. In the case of check truncation, the physical check will not move. There is no need for the bank at Delhi to send the check by post or courier to Mumbai. What they will do is they will scan the check that I have given to Mr. X in Delhi. His bank or the Reserve Bank of India there, through the clearing system, will scan it and put the image. That image will be sent to the bank here in Mumbai, and my bank will capture that image and see that everything is in order, and they will make the payment. So the physical movement of the check is stopped. That is, it is truncated. And it is truncated only for the purpose of collection of the payment, not for any other reason. So check truncation is in force today to a limited extent. It is not there all over India now. It is there only in certain major cities. But this check truncation is only for the purpose of collection, for the purpose of payment of money. And it is done only by certain banks. The Reserve Bank of India will do it at the clearing house, or the bank, any other bank who is in charge of the clearing house, they will do it. Other people cannot do it. And it will be done in a secure system. because once the image is captured, you cannot make changes in the image. You cannot do cut paste and create another new check in the electronic system. That's not possible. So whatever physical check was given, that same physical check with all the wordings appearing on it will be captured in the system, and that system will be secured. It will be made totally security proof, and that image will travel to the bank which has to make the payment, and there will be no physical travel of the check. The image is captured and that is sent, and the bank which has to pay will see the image. They will also see the entire thing. They can see my signature also on the check, and when everything is in order, they will make the payment. The payment is made not on the basis of physical check but on the basis of the image. So this is check truncation, and Negotiable Instrument Act has taken care of this check truncation technology today, and they have made the changes, they have added. And a truncated check means a check which is truncated. That means movement is stopped during the course of a clearing cycle, either by the clearing house or by the bank, whether paying or receiving payment, immediately on generation of an electronic image for transmission, substituting further physical movement of the check. There is no further physical movement. Now we go to section 7. The drawer and the drawee. Who is a drawer? The maker of the bill of exchange or a promissory note. He is the drawer. The maker of a bill of exchange or check is called as the drawer. The person directed to pay is called as the drawee. In the bill of exchange, A is asking B to pay to C. So A is the drawer. He has signed the instrument. B is the person who has been asked to make the payment. So B is the drawee. A is the drawer, B is the drawee. The maker of the bill of exchange or check is called as the drawer. The person directed to pay is known as the drawee. When the name of a person is given in addition to that of the drawee to be called upon in case of any problem for payment, he is known as the drawee in case of need. So we have the drawer and the drawee. Drawer is the person who has made the instrument, who has signed it. Drawee is the person who has to make the payment. And in case the drawee is not able to make the payment, the bill of exchange may have a provision that in case B is not going to pay, let Mr. X make the payment. So X becomes a drawee in case of need. That means in case B does not pay, let X make the payment. So there is a drawee in case of need. Now, as far as checks are concerned, in the case of checks, the drawee is always a bank. It is the bank on whom the check is drawn. So in the case of a check, can there be a drawee in case of need? Can there be a drawee in case of need in the case of a check? No. Because a check is drawn on a specified banker, and there is no drawee in case of need as far as a check is concerned. Drawee in case of need comes up only in the case of a bill of exchange. A check is drawn on a specified banker. So in the case of a check, there is no question of a drawee in case of need. Only for bill of exchange, there can be a drawee in case of need. Okay. Now section 7. Section 7 deals with the acceptor. See, a bill of exchange is drawn by one person on another, asking that other person to make the payment to a third party. Now that second person, the one who has been instructed, please pay. Now if he signs on the bill, I agree, I accept, he becomes the acceptor. A drawee becomes an acceptor when he signs his name on the face of the bill, agreeing to pay the bill. The drawee has been told to make the payment. He accepts that liability. He says, okay, I'll pay on the due date. And he has to sign. Simply telling orally is not enough. He has to sign on the face of the bill. So usually he will sign on the top of the bill, I accept. And he becomes an acceptor. So a drawee is an acceptor. The drawee becomes an acceptor when he signs his name on the face of the bill, agreeing to pay the bill. The drawee, to become acceptor, must write the words accepted. He simply signing is not enough. You know, the drawer of the bill has already signed at the bottom. The drawee signs on the top, it makes no sense. He has to write specifically accepted. He need not write anything more. He may or may not write. But the word accepted should appear. Accept it, then sign and put the date. Any person who accepts the bill for the honor of the drawer or any of its endorsees is called as acceptor for honor. Now suppose the drawee does not want to pay. He refuses. When the bill was prepared, he had agreed to pay, but subsequently he says, nahi, nahi, main pay nahi karunga. I don't want to pay to C. Ab A ke liye problem ho gaya. Because C is going to pester him and say, paisa lao, paisa lao. So, what A will say, suppose B does not agree, B does not pay, then let Mr. X pay. Let Mr. X agree. So, Mr. X will become the acceptor for honor. Why is Mr. X agreeing when the bill is drawn on B? Mr. X is agreeing because he does not want A's reputation to be spoiled. So that is why he says, I am accepting, and he becomes an acceptor for honor. He is not just an acceptor, he is an acceptor, but he is accepting for the honor of the maker. So he is an acceptor for honor. Now section 8 deals with the holder of an instrument. The holder means a person entitled in his own name to the possession of the instrument. Normally English language holder means somebody who is holding something. But here, in the case of negotiable instruments, a holder means somebody who is entitled to hold, who has the right to hold it. He has got the possession of the instrument, but he also has the right to hold that instrument. He is not a thief who has stolen the check. He is not a robber. Or he is not just some finder ki somebody ne raste chalte chalte ghuma diya aur isne utha liya. So he is not such a person. He is a person who is really entitled to hold it. He has got the possession in the normal business transaction, and he is also entitled to receive or recover the amount due thereon from the parties thereto. He has the right to get that money. So he is holding it because he got it in the normal business way, and he is also entitled to get that amount. He must get the amount. If the person is not going to pay, he can even file a suit and recover the amount. So that is why the Act says that he is a person who is entitled in his own name to receive or recover the amount due thereon from the parties thereto. So he is entitled to hold, keep the possession, and also to receive or recover the amount. The holder may be a de facto holder or a de jure holder. De facto holder is somebody who is holding it, but uske hath mein nahi hai instrument. Kisi aur ke hath mein hai, but that person is holding it on behalf of this person. A ke hath mein instrument aana chahiye because A is the, say, the beneficiary, the payee or the endorsee. But it is in the hands of B because B is maybe his son or his brother or another partner of the firm or a servant who has been told ki go and get the payment. Some agent representing the principal. So there it is de facto holder. So the physically the instrument is not in his possession, but he is entitled to have it. He has given the instrument to his servant or to his representative to go and get the amount. Or he may be the de jure holder. De jure holder means as per law, as per normal judicial provisions, he is entitled to hold it. The holder is entitled to possession in his own name and money. He is entitled. Here now we are talking of holder in the technical meaning, not just a physical holding of the instrument. A holder means he is entitled to possession. He can have the possession and he can also have the money. So he will have the possession and he will also get the money. So he is a person who is entitled, and if he does not get it, he can go to the court and recover the amount. Now section 9 talks of holder in due course. Who's a holder? A holder is somebody who's entitled to have the possession and who's entitled to recover the amount in his own name. A holder in due course is one step ahead. A holder in due course means any person who for consideration became the possessor of a promissory note, bill of exchange or check if payable to bearer. Means he is a person who gets the possession of the instrument because he has passed on some consideration. He might have sold some goods, he might have sold a machinery, or he has given a loan to somebody, and in turn he gets this instrument that I promise to pay you, I agree to pay, or Mr. B is going to pay to you on the due date. So he is going to get the amount in the instrument, but because he has made the payment already, he has passed on consideration. Consideration is not just physical money movement, it means some service rendered, some goods sold or some loan given. So there is consideration, and because of that consideration he gets this promissory note or bill of exchange in his favor. The payee or endorsee, if payable to order, before the amount mentioned in it became payable and without having any doubt to believe that any defect existed in the title of the person. Now there are some more riders. First, holder in due course is somebody who gets the instrument because he has passed on some consideration. Secondly, he is the payee or endorsee. Thirdly, the instrument comes to him before the due date. And fourthly, he believes fully well ki jisne ye mujhe diya wo sahi vyakti hai, he did not have any defect in his title. And that is why I am also getting a good title. This is the gist of the holder in due course. I hope this is very clear. Section 10. Now, section 10 deals with payment in due course. What is payment in due course? Due course doesn't mean time, that in due course of time. It means payment in the proper method, proper way that it should be really effected. So, payment in due course means the payment in accordance with the apparent tenor of the instrument, what is mentioned on the instrument, pay to Mr. XYZ, you are going to pay to XYZ. So, you have to establish the identity of XYZ. Pay rupees 10,000, so you are going to pay 10,000 rupees. On demand, obviously, if the instrument bill of exchange says on demand, you pay on demand, or you pay 30 days after date or 1 month after date, whatever, you pay according to that. So, payment in due course means payment in accordance with the apparent tenor of the instrument in good faith and without negligence. Here comes the role of the payer. He has to establish that he is going to pay to the real person who is entitled to receive that amount. So, you are going to make payment to the holder or the holder in due course. You are not going to pay it to anybody. Koi aare gare ko aap paise nahi denge, even though it is a bearer instrument, aap dekhenge ki aadmi jo hai samne wala paise lene wala. He is the person who is representing the payee, or he is the payee himself and he is taking the money. You are paying without negligence, you are going to pay in good faith because you believe fully well ki samne jo hai Mr. Mehta, he is Mr. Mehta. He is Mr. Rustamji, he is Rustamji. So you don't have any reason to believe otherwise. So you are believing in good faith and without negligence. To any person in possession thereof, under circumstances that do not afford a reasonable ground to believe otherwise, means to believe that he is not entitled to receive the amount mentioned therein. Under these circumstances, see, the person is going to say that I am Mr. Sundaresan. Now, this word Sundaresan gives an idea that he is a South Indian. But the person who has come to take the money is a Sardarji with turban. Now, what happens in that case? You have reason to doubt. Ki how can he be Mr. Sundaresan? Ye to Sardarji hai. To iska naam kuch Kartar Singh, Balwinder Singh, aisa hona chahiye. He can't be Mr. Sundaresan. This doubt will come to any person under normal circumstances. So under circumstances that do not afford a reasonable ground to believe that he is not entitled to receive that payment. So you have to ensure that the person who has come to take the payment is the real person who is the beneficiary, or he is the representative of the beneficiary. He cannot be somebody who is not entitled to get that amount. Where the person who has come to collect the money is representing the payee. Suppose the servant has come, the master has sent the servant, job paise leke aao, and the check is for say 8,44,000. Ab servant ke haath mein aap itna bada paisa doge? This is a doubt which will come into the minds of any payer, any drawee. Ki servant ke haath mein itna bada paisa de diya aur wo lekar bhaag gaya, to how do I answer the main payee? So you have a doubt in your mind. Did the master really send him? So you are going to telephone and ask that original payee ki dekho aapke naam pe check hai aur aapka servant aaya hai aur itna bada amount hai, 8.5 lakh ka check hai, to kya isko main cash dun? So this is the care that you are going to take. So you are going to exercise that caution, and if you do that, then you say you are acting without negligence. And if all these caution precautionary steps are taken, and if the payment is made to the right person, then it is payment in due course. That is, it is payment in the normal course of business without any negligence, in good faith, as per the tenor of the instrument, and to the person who is entitled to receive that amount. This is payment in due course. Now we come to section 11 and 12. This tells us what is an inland bill, what is a foreign bill. If a promissory note, bill of exchange or check is drawn or made in India, it is made in India by the person residing in India and made payable in or drawn upon any person resident in India, shall be deemed to be an inland instrument. It is made payable in India or drawn upon a person residing in India. The word or is very important. A bill of exchange or a promissory note or a check drawn in India. So the maker is in India. The person who has made the instrument, who is signing the instrument, is in India. It is payable to somebody in India or outside India, or it is payable outside India or in India. If it is going to be payable outside India, it will be in the currency of that country where it is to be paid. So that is why an inland bill need not necessarily be in Indian rupees. We usually get the idea that inland bill means in Indian rupees, foreign bill means in foreign currency. No, this is not the definition. Definition of inland bill as per Negotiable Instrument Act, it says that it is a bill, promissory note or bill of exchange or check made in India, made payable in India or drawn on a person in India. One of the two. And that is deemed to be an inland instrument. And any bill which is not an inland bill is a foreign bill. There is no separate definition of the foreign bill. The definition of foreign bill is what is not an inland bill is a foreign bill. So suppose an instrument is made in India, payable to somebody outside India and payable in a foreign country, then it becomes a foreign bill. If a bill is prepared in a foreign country, payable to somebody in India, it will be a foreign bill. It is in Indian rupees because it is payable in India, but it is prepared by somebody staying abroad, so it is a foreign bill. So I hope this is very clear. An inland bill is something made in India, maybe on a person in India, but payable outside India, or payable in India, somebody residing outside India. And anything other than this is a foreign bill. Now, we have been talking of Negotiable Instrument Act. But what is a negotiable instrument? As I said earlier, the Act does not define a negotiable instrument. It only says a negotiable instrument means a promissory note, bill of exchange or check. So, a check is a negotiable instrument, a bill of exchange is a negotiable instrument, a promissory note is a bill of exchange, a negotiable instrument. A negotiable instrument includes all these three. And all these three are in turn negotiable instruments. And when you say negotiable, what does that word mean? Negotiable. When a negotiable instrument is transferred to another person, a negotiable instrument, there is a beneficiary, there is a payee, but he transfers it to somebody else so as to make that person the holder thereof. The instrument is said to be negotiated. So, A has drawn a bill on B payable to C. So, now C is the beneficiary. C is holding that bill. He is waiting for the due date to come. In the meanwhile, he has to make payment to D. So, instead of giving cash to that D, he only endorses this instrument in favor of D. And he says, you take the money on the due date. Now, C has endorsed the bill to D. And D is now the holder of the instrument. He has handed over the instrument to D. So, he has transferred the rights, the benefits, the title to D. Now, C will not be the payee. C will be the endorser. D becomes the endorsee. D will become the holder of the instrument. And what has C done? He has negotiated. He has transferred and delivered the instrument to D. So, when a negotiable instrument is transferred to any person, so as to make that person the holder thereof, the instrument is said to be negotiated. So, negotiation means that you have transferred your title, your benefits to another person, and you have handed over the instrument to the other person. It is transfer and delivery. Both have to take place. You are transferring your title, your benefits to the other person, and you are handing over the instrument physically to the other person. So, transfer and delivery, this is negotiable. And in negotiable, there is another clause attached to it. When I am transferring a stolen property to somebody else, even maybe for consideration, I steal a mobile phone and then I sell it to another person. The mobile phone is costing 10,000 rupees, but I give it to him for 5,000 rupees. Even then the person, although he pays 5,000 rupees, he cannot be the true owner because a stolen property is a stolen property. It will never give you good title. In the case of negotiable instruments, there is no such rule. It says that even if I have got a bad title, मैं चोर हूँ, फिर भी यदि मैंने consideration के लिए किसी और को ये bill endorse किया, that person will get a good title. He will be the true owner of the instrument, although I am not the true owner. I have got a bad title, but I can pass on a good title. This is the speciality of a negotiable instrument. Now we come to endorsements. When we talk of negotiation, we say you transfer and deliver it to somebody else. Now, how is this done? This is done by way of doing some act. You have to sign something, you have to write something, and that is known as endorsement. When the maker or holder of a negotiable instrument signs the same, otherwise than a such maker, the one who is signing on the face of the instrument is the maker of the instrument. The person who signs on the top saying accepted, he is the acceptor. Now, somebody else is signing not as a maker, not as an acceptor, but he is signing for the purpose of negotiation on the back or face thereof, or on a slip of paper annexed thereto, or so signs for the same purpose a stamp paper intended to be completed as a negotiable instrument. He is said to endorse the same, and he is known as the endorser. What he does, he may sign on the back side of the instrument, or he may sign on a separate paper, or maybe on a stamp paper, and says that this instrument is supposed to be transferred to Mr. X. He writes there, please pay to Mr. X or order, or he just signs and he hands it over to Mr. X. His intention is that whatever money I am supposed to get, let that money go to Mr. X. So, he signs for the purpose that it should be negotiated to Mr. X. What he has done? He has endorsed it in favor of Mr. X. So, he is said to endorse the same, and he is known as the endorser. So, Mr. C, who is the payee beneficiary, is transferring his benefits to D by signing. He is said to endorse. He is the endorser. D or X is the endorsee. Now, how many types of endorsements are there? That section 16 takes care of. we have, see, if the endorser is just signing his name, does not write anything, then it is an endorsement in blank. He has only signed, he has not written anything. It is an endorsement in blank. If he adds a direction to pay the amount to Mr. X or order, he says to pay to Mr. X only, then he is adding something. If he adds a direction to pay the amount mentioned in the instrument to or to the order of a specified person, the endorsement is said to be in full. If he just signs, does not write anything, it is endorsement in blank. If he signs but also writes, please pay to Mr. X or order, he has made a full endorsement. The person so specified is called the endorsee of the instrument. So, this Mr. X becomes the endorsee.